This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get back, Loretta 613, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Tim Zimmer getting us started there with some Beatles and I'm trying to think of the name of the song. Get back, Loretta. Jojo was a man who thought he was lost. Get back, Loretta. Get back to where you can. I don't know. Anyway, Andy Smith, you know the name of the song?
Title? I'll go with Get Back.
Get Back is the name of it. That's exactly right. Get Back. Is that what we're looking for, Tim? Yes, that's what we're looking for. We have a winner with Andy Smith. 46 for a high today. Right now, I beg your pardon, 57 for a high. Right now it's 46. New Hampshire, on the other hand, let me tell you what's going on where Andy Smith is. It is raining, and it is about 35 degrees, and it's going to be raining all day today, with highs almost near 40, and then it's going to go to the 50s, then down high temperatures only in the 20s on Friday, Saturday. So y'all are getting ready for some Christmassy weather, huh, Andy?
Yeah, and I hope all this rain is going to melt by the time we're going to take care of the snow and disappear so we don't have ice. So that's a big problem that we have this time of year when it gets cold like this. But, yep, a little bit of snow for Christmas would be nice.
We do, too, with the ice here, especially when you go to get an old-fashioned somewhere and they don't have those big blocks of ice. Instead, they have the little cubes because it's just not the same.
It's not the same.
No, it's not the same at all. You know what I want to ask you about as one great political scientist mind to another? When it comes to President Trump, I'm just going to call him that instead of former and President-elect Trump, President Trump.
The once and future president.
There you go. Do you see him as more of an ideologue or a pragmatist? Because it seems like when it comes to immigration, when it comes to tariffs, he's certainly an ideologue there, and he certainly firmly believes in that. But as far as other things and social issues, some of the far-right things that he moved to get elected, you think he really cares about that or not? I'm just curious, in your opinion as a political scientist.
I don't think so. If you look at his trajectory as a politician, he's been all over the map from being a Democrat early on and supporting Democrats to supporting Republicans to supporting both of them. And, you know, famously saying that, you know, everybody used to come to him and ask him for money. So I think he's much more of a transactional president. What position and what person should he support that will benefit what he wants to get done? I think that to your point about even tariffs and so forth, I think those are even not so much believing in tariffs as a way of raising revenue or controlling trade, but as a way of leveraging other countries to do things. I mean, you look at just the mere mention of tariffs on Canada, and Justin Trudeau is flying down to Florida to negotiate. So I think that he uses a lot of these things as ways to get the attention and uses them as of other countries and then to negotiate.
So with that being said, as a transactional president, that leads me to the next question of two. Pursue his agenda and immigration. I don't know if that's transactional. I think that he firmly believes in that. Thoughts?
Well, I think he believes in it, and it's certainly a winning political issue. And there are some things that he can do as a president to deal with that issue, because it's something that the public has been concerned about, frankly, for a couple decades now. One of the things that I think probably not to put it in context, we've had more immigration in the last 4 years than really at any time in American history. That now we have the highest percentage of foreign born citizens in the country, really the beginning of the United States, certainly higher than it was in the 1890s when we had big immigration pushes. So I think he's going to use – he can do things about immigration, but I think it's – I don't understand necessarily why he thinks it's a big economic issue for him. I think it's – that's more of an issue that was what he got him into office, and he better do something about it.
Yeah. So the reason I ask is when it comes to being a transactional president, who's driving the wagon here? Because – Is he still the 1,000-pound gorilla where if you wrong him and cross him, as Bill Cassidy did here, you draw opposition in the Senate race? Or because he's now never going to be able to run for president again as it stands, does that mean that then the Republicans, is he a lame duck now? Do you understand what I'm saying? Who's got the power here when it comes to pulling the strings on the transactions?
Well, I don't think he's a lame duck yet.
I didn't mean it that way, but you know what I mean.
I think after the 2026 midterm elections, he's going to lose a lot of capacity, or once he's out of office, he loses a lot of capacity. I guess what I'm asking, Andy, is who's got to work with whom is what I'm trying to ask here. Yeah, I think that he's got to work with Congress because he's really got to do eventually, if he wants to have anything that's long lasting, he has to pass it through legislation. He can't just do it through executive order. And the problem that he's got with Congress, he's got a super slim majority in the House of Representatives, which would only take a few people to vote against him. And that's problematic for them. And he's only got 53 seats in the Senate, too, which is too small to get through a filibuster. So he's going to have to make deals. He's going to have to make deals with Democrats. But he's also going to have to make deals with the Republicans to get any of this stuff through.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back, and we'll pick it up there with making deals with Democrats. How's that going to fly with the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the people that are just so closely attached to him, Mike Johnson, for example? And do they dare challenge him if he tries to make a deal with the Democrats, or do they fall in line? I'm just wondering about the balance of power here. 620 more when we come back with Andy Smith. Y'all have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. Time now for traffic on WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, talking about President-elect Trump and his agenda. And where does the timing of this fit in, Andy, with momentum and everything else, and the midterms are knocking on the door, believe it or not? The next election begins as soon as the old election is over with, or the previous election is over with. How much of an essence is time as it relates to Trump getting some of this stuff through with the Republican majority that he has, a slim majority in the House and the Senate?
I think it's really critical for him because 2026 is not going to be a good year for Republicans. Historically, the president's party loses seats in the House, and Republicans are likely to lose some more seats in the House in 2026, which means it will effectively stop any ability for him to get legislation really moving through. So he's got to do a lot of stuff very quickly. He's got to keep Republicans on his side when they think that he still has that that political power. You know, we call political capital. That's really kind of an ephemeral term, just means that people think that you've got support of the people behind you. You can see that he started off that way, claiming a huge mandate right after the election, which turns out really not to be a huge mandate. But he's got to take advantage of what he can right away. And I think that's why he's probably going to do a lot of the things that he can through an executive order, which might be short-term wins. It's going to be harder for him to get the actual legislation through because, as you said, people have their eye on the next election already.
Politically, as it relates to the cabinet hearings and nominations, et cetera, does that get in the way of any of this?
Yeah, it does. It gets in the way a little bit, but I don't think it's that important because the cabinet agencies aren't as critical for policy. They're important for implementing policy down the road, or just the legalistic processes. But it's people within the White House, and he doesn't need to get confirmation from people for those people that are going to be working in the White House. Those are going to be his closest advisors and really the most important people on policy. And they're going to be the ones who are going to be advising him on what to do through executive order or on immigration issues or on some of the foreign policy issues that are out there. There's one thing to get things done. It's another thing to get things done and have them codified into legislation, which is going to be there after you've gone as president.
Give me a controversial cabinet nomination. I'm just trying to think of one. Give me one. Pick one.
Tulsi Gabbard's a good one.
Oh, you pick Tulsi Gabbard. All right, so he puts her up, and he puts, who's his name, Hegseth? Is that his name?
Hegseth, yeah.
So maybe former President President Trump does this, and then when it comes down to confirmation, he sits down with some Democratic senators and he says, look, tell you what, I'll go ahead and pull their names. We'll put somebody else up for these cabinet positions. But in exchange for that, I get your vote on this, or we get this passed, or we get that passed. Where he never had intention of these people to be cabinet secretaries to begin with. He's just using it again, as he's using tariffs as a negotiating ploy. Thoughts on that, or am I making up stuff in my head?
Yeah, I think he's going to have a hard time convincing Democrats to do that, because what's in it for them? To not have somebody that is controversial anyway. I mean, it may be better for Democrats to have these controversial people in office, because they're going to be walking headlines.
So that's what I was asking you, I guess. Who does that benefit, the controversial cabinet choices, or is it just...
I think it benefits Democrats.
It does?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate your time. Insights, as always. We'll talk to you again soon. If not, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy whatever you celebrate, all right?
And the same to you, too.
And happy old-fashions.
Celebrate that old-fashioned.
There you go. Now we're on the same page. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to Julie O'Donoghue when we come back. Senior writer at the Louisiana Illuminator about Governor Landry and some problems he's having with the Ethics Board right now. Time for WWL First News.